When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, friends, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my friend, Robbie Earle. Robbie, how are you today?
I am doing well. I have to apologize for the lateness of this episode and our feed. For those that have been...
You did this.
eagerly awaiting... One, thank you for eagerly awaiting this episode. That does actually mean a lot to us that people are that excited to see it land. And two, I was traveling and having to get back to Austin the first weekend of Austin City Limits, which was a terrible decision on my part. But here I am, and I am ready to focus on the important things in life and... Those are, of course, the events of the MCU.
Make bad decisions, bad things happen. I was taught that at an early age, Robbie. To be fair to us, we said episodes were going to be coming out on Thursdays. We didn't say Thursday at 12:01 a.m., people, okay? So
true.
Cut us a little bit of slack. It's still out on a Thursday, which is great. So we're happy to be here.
It's true.
I, too, am coming off kind of a wild week, Robbie. Mm-hmm. Couple things here. I worked at the Ryder Cup last week for any golfers out
that's
there.
That's right.
If you don't know what that is, it's a huge event in golf where America competes against Europe. So there's two teams. And a lot of these golfers don't get to do teams very often. So I have to say that A, it was fun. And B, shout out to our Wisconsin listeners. Because I was in Sheboygan and Manitowoc, Wisconsin, at a golf course called Whistling Straits, which was unbelievable. Fantastic. If I was giving it a grade, it'd probably be like a 9.4. We're up there. It's really up there.
Wow.
It was pushing Pebble for maybe my best golf experience ever, but I didn't get a chance to play it, so I can't give it a full ranking. Okay. Anyways, tangent over. But shout out to the beautiful state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I feel we've talked so much about different states and weather this season for some reason.
Because it's fall and it's the best.
It's true.
You clarified that already.
I am just so I'm so annoyed that the only times I've ever been to Wisconsin are in the winter.
That's bad timing.
Which I know. Look, you know, you make bad decisions, bad things happen.
Bad things happen. Right. You're learning. Good. I have a funny story though too. This is totally unrelated to anything, but I was checking into my hotel and the people there were so kind, but these older people were helping me check in and they were like, "Oh, we can't find your reservation." And I was like, "Well, my company books it. There's hundreds of us here." And they're like, "Oh, you were supposed to be here yesterday." And I'm like, "Well, it got changed, but I'm here now. So go ahead. It's, you know, it's their card. Just change it to today. And he's like, well, I really was hoping you weren't going to come. And I was like, okay, well, do you have a room? They're like, well, we have this one room, but the locks don't work. Don't worry. We're going to get them reprogrammed. I'll just let you in. So the first night the guy walks me to my room, like comes in my room and is adjusting my thermostat. Like, hey, don't turn this down too fast, 'cause it won't work right. But, and I'm like, okay, thanks. Anyways, I was there for 5 days. They never fixed the lock. So every night I had to call them and they had to walk me to my room. And it just was an interesting experience. Let me put it that way. So I made it out alive. I survived. They were kind, but it was an inconvenience, no doubt.
Wow,
we're off topic.
Talking about inconveniences, though.
Yes, speaking of inconveniences, you know this part. This is the only other thing I have to update. I told some people on Slack that I was going to get a chance to see Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage, on Tuesday night. So 2 or 3 nights before the movie actually came out, which is awesome. We got hooked up with Sony, and they had a theater here in Nashville I could go to, which is a gift because I've been flying to you every time, as our listeners know. But anyways, I got there at like 6:50 for a 7 o'clock movie, and they told me I needed to have a vaccination card, which I had never had happen before. Now I am vaccinated, but I don't travel with my card. And so I was like, well, I'm vaccinated. They're like, well, I have to see a card or a negative test. I was like, well, my wife's not home and I don't have it on me. And they basically said, sorry, we can't let you in. This is not the movie theater, by the way. This is the showing company.
Right.
And so I couldn't go in. So I didn't go. So brutal. Yeah. So I haven't seen it yet. So I say that all not to throw the company under the bus, but just to tell our listeners, sorry, I have not seen it yet. So we'll be talking about it in the future.
Man. Well, I was jealous that you were going to get to go. Like I said, I was out of town, so I wasn't going to be able to go to the premiere. I am trying to go this weekend. Hopefully we can. I've been so nervous that, I mean, because I feel like this is such a small thing that is at the end of this movie, whatever it is in the post-credit scene, that seemingly has pretty big implications. I'm just very like extra sensitive to it being easily spoiled. And so I'm sort of surprised that it hasn't been for us yet. I know a lot of folks have either seen it or have intentionally sought it out, but I'm hoping that I can go ahead and get it seen this weekend and be up to date. I will say the movie has gotten the reviews just came out today and they are a good bit better than the first movie.
Really?
So
I saw some really mixed ones. A couple of reviews were shared on our Slack that were not very kind. It's living at like 60% or something, I think.
So far? I mean, but I think if I remember correctly, the first one was in like the 30s.
I'm sure it's hit or miss. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some things that people love and then other things that just will feel, you know, like they didn't improve on the first one. So,
right. Well, we'll see. If that movie does indeed connect to the MCU, we will make sure to cover it here and in more in depth. Elsewhere, which we will talk about next week.
Yes. It's a wild time to be alive as an MCU fan, Robbie. I'm getting confused on what we need to all include in watching pre-Spider-Man.
Right.
And depending on what all becomes canon or brought in or is part of the multiverse or whatever, I got a lot of watching to do, basically. That would be a lot. There's a lot of things to catch up on.
That's true.
Did you even see that gif of in this What If episode when they're fighting through the multiverse? One of the shots looks like a Star Wars planet. Have you seen this?
No.
Apparently, one of the realms they went to was a Star Wars planet.
Oh, my gosh. Like,
and so now I think thedirect.com has an article out about how Star Wars might be canon now in the MCU.
I'm just like,
I don't even know what to think anymore with this stuff. Like,
I'm
fighting this battle of, I know a ton of people think it's so cool that the more things that are canon, the better, I guess. Like the more you can bring in, it's just infinitely better. Right. It never has diminishing returns. And yet I do not feel that way. I don't need Star Wars to be canon in the MCU. What are we doing?
I definitely don't need Star Wars to be. I don't need like a a Jedi Iron Man battle at any point.
And then the question has to be, where does it stop, right? Are we getting Star Trek brought in here? Are we going to get Goosebumps brought in here? Nickelodeon? I mean, I don't know where. Yeah, it's crazy. So we'll see.
As the behemoth that is Disney slowly absorbs all of the world, like Ultron and episode
becomes like Galactus. we'll see. I mean, it could literally just be a funny shout out Easter egg, which I'm guessing it is. I don't think Rey is going to show up next to Wanda or anything like that, but right. We'll see.
Oh no, Kyle. That's not good.
Oh gosh. Okay. So this is the point. This is the point in the episode, Kyle, when I realize, you remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about how I was so grateful that I realized my microphone was muted before I actually started talking.
Yeah. Oh, no.
this time my mic wasn't muted, but for some reason the computer wasn't picking it up, so everyone's just been listening to me, I think, speaking into my 2013 MacBook microphone.
No. So, do we have to do it all over?
I mean, look, I think that our listeners value authenticity.
We're trying to salvage it still. Oh, no. We always pride ourselves on the quality. Robbie, are you kidding me?
You know what?
First, you're late. Secondly, he doesn't use his mic. Unbelievable.
I'm gonna get fired.
Can you change it?
I'm gonna get fired. I did. I changed it. Okay. Hopefully this is sounding better now.
Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, let's just move past that, pretend like it didn't happen, and finish this out strong. Let's finish this out strong. Let's be better than we have been today, okay? Let's bring it 100%. Are you in?
I'm in, and I'm ready to dive in to the meat of today's episode.
Before we do that, I want to say thank you so much to all of you out there who are listening to this podcast. It's National Podcast Day today, which we noticed on social media at the FFW podcast. And so thank you so much to everyone who's made this podcast possible for us. We love you so much. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, wherever you get your podcasts. Spread the word about Friends From Work. And a special shout out to Greg, who donated last week. So shout out, Greg. Thank you so much. For those of you who have already donated, it means so much to us. And thank you, Greg, for doing that a couple weeks ago.
Yes, absolutely.
You can donate to the podcast at the FFWpodcast.com, where you can also get some merchandise. We have more merch coming very soon. Some exciting new products we're excited about. And some more things up our sleeves that we'll be talking about in the next couple weeks. But for now, let's not gloss over this crazy What If Episode 8. So, Robbie, let's talk about What If Episode 8 after a quick word from our sponsors.
All right, Kyle. Episode 8 of What If is entitled What If Ultron Won? And this is maybe the craziest episode of the season so far. It's the one that I think a lot of people have been looking forward to and sort of piecing together from different promos. And we have a strong cast showing up. First and foremost, as always, we have Jeffrey Wright here. However, in this episode, he is arguably the protagonist and playing a much larger role than he has in the past. We'll talk about that. We have Jeremy Renner here as Hawkeye. We have Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange very briefly. We have Lake Bell coming back as Natasha, who I think is doing a really, really good job in the show.
Me too. She's one of the better non-MCU voice actors we've had so far.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think someone made the joke on the Slack that she sounds more like Scarlett Johansson than Jeremy Renner does like Jeremy Renner.
I disagreed with that, by the way. I liked Jeremy Renner. It's funny.
I did
but
too.
I'm not on, I did too, on board but, with that. Okay.
We had Toby Jones come back as Arnim Zola. And we had Ross Marquand come back as not Red Skull, which is what I sort of thought when I saw him show up in the credits, but as Ultron, doing his best James Spader, which we can talk about here. We had Mick Wingert come back as Tony Stark and die, as Golly. Always. Yeah. Alexandra Daniels, again, killed it as Carol Danvers. And finally, we had a brief cameo from Josh Keaton's Captain America. And before we go on, since this doesn't factor in very heavily into this episode, I did want to say, man, we have not had very much Cap in this show.
Mm-mm. That's true. And you would say, well, that's because they're trying to move on, but we're still getting a ton of Tony.
Yeah, so. Right. I mean, and I'm just trying to, it's interesting. I mean, I guess they obviously started with him, but that wasn't really Cap, you know? I mean, and so we got Zombie Cap, but, right. and we'll talk about this little scene that he shows up in maybe briefly when we're talking about some of the Easter eggs here, but just something I was thinking about even coming into this episode this week, and I'm, doesn't seem as though that's going to change next episode, maybe next season. I know they're doing, AC told us they were going to be focusing more on some phase 4 things, mm-hmm. which I would imagine would include some Falcon Winter Soldier. So I could see maybe that incorporating some Steve Rogers stuff. But anyway, this episode was written by Matthew Chauncey. It was directed by Brian Andrews. And of course, it was scored very well, I might add, by Laura Cartman.
Our friend.
And that is our cast and crew here.
Our friend from work.
there you go.
Okay, I have a question for you to start. Do you want to start really high level with What If and this episode? Or do you want to do kind of small ground level review first? You pick.
Oh, gosh. You know what? Let's start ground level, because I feel like we always start high level, and then
okay, I love it.
You know, people are maybe folks out there like, hey, we just want to hear about the episode, and they're just rambling about whatever it is they want to talk about, and we're just trying to get to the meat of this thing. So let's just change it up, you know. Give them let's pull a Justin Hammer, give them the dessert first, and then we can cycle back.
What is it? Italian ice cream, but I flew it in from San Francisco. what is it?
It's Italian though.
It's Italian, though. Yeah, exactly. Okay, I thought the visuals were stunning. Probably the best What If visuals yet. I thought the shot of Clint Barton sacrificing himself, you got a very, like, Thor Immigrant Song Ragnarok graphic novel type shot for a second there in slow motion.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was super
kinda
cool.
Snyder-esque almost.
Yeah, so cool, though.
Yeah.
It felt almost like 300, kind of, that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really enjoyed how they visualized all of Ultron's robots at times. Like, there was creepy scenes where they're crawling out of the tunnel, flying out of the tunnel. I just thought some of those visuals were pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I thought all of the Watcher Ultron fight scenes, where it's like each punch is taking them to a different universe.
Right, like how the multiverse was even visualized was cool.
I mean, the way that you would have a crowd of people and then the crowd kept changing. I mean, you had it be Wakandans and then Skrulls and then people in New York. And it was just, and then I think at one point it's a tower and then it's a castle. And it's just the way that they did that was very neat visually, I thought.
Second thing, ground level, you brought this up already, but yeah, Tony Stark can't catch a break. Holy crap.
Man.
That was one of my notes again. He dies again. And what's crazy about that is it seems like they're intentionally showing us his death every time. Like, did you notice that in that scene, Hulk and Thor and Cap had already been killed?
Right.
They were on the ground. So,
right.
A, it shows Ultron's power. But B, I mean, what the heck? Why'd they have to have Tony be the one again to be
right.
the last man standing? They really
Although,
want us to know he's dead.
Props to Tony for outlasting Hulk and Thor.
Right. And we'll get to the power level thing in a second here. We'll get there on the high level thing, okay? Just trust me. I got you.
I do, on that note, you know, we were just talking a little bit, very briefly last episode about Age of Ultron, and we've always circled around this idea that Tony was responsible for Ultron and thus for a kind of a lot of the fallout of that, arguably, the Sokovia Accords and things like that, if you want to extrapolate. I don't know if that's totally fair, but I did think that it was interesting here seeing, like, man, Tony really, he really messed up in this universe.
Yeah. It didn't turn out as well.
It didn't. He caused all of life in the entire universe except for multiverse
potentially. Tough sled. Hey, you know what we said? The theme of this episode, you make bad decisions, bad things happen, Tony. He has not learned his lesson yet like you just did earlier today.
That's true.
Okay.
Well, maybe he did right before he died.
Yeah, that's true. It was too late. On another ground level thing, I feel like all of these voice actors are doing such a good job, and the guy who did Ultron did a good job, but holy crap, it puts in perspective how much I enjoyed James Spader's take on Ultron.
Yeah.
My wife and I, the first thing we thought when we ended it was, wow, what a bummer they couldn't get James Spader, because this guy did such a good job, but it even made apparent how good James Spader's Ultron is. What an underrated character in the MCU for some reason. And Ross Marcon is doing a good job. There's even a couple lines where he kind of puts in James Spader's
inflection.
Like wit. Yeah, his inflection and wit. Like when he's talking to the Watcher and he says, which is kind of creepy, by the way, that was very much an Ultron line. But it just, it made it apparent, like, holy cow, James Spader is so good as Ultron.
Right. Yeah, there were some lines where they tried to kind of capture it. Like when Thanos shows up, which we'll talk about, he says, fascinating. And it's like a very, I'm with you.
Not only is James Spader's voice a little quirkier, though, it's also a little bit deeper. And his delivery is kind of creepier, like the, there are no strings on me.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah,
you didn't get that fully in this, I felt like.
Well, and I just felt like, and I want to stress what you said, this is not an issue with Ross's performance, because I thought that was excellent. But that is one that I just think relied so heavily on Spader's, like the little idiosyncrasies. And I think that losing that, it made me weirdly just less interested in this version of Ultron, which I know maybe isn't totally fair, but I think part of what, like every time I watch Age of Ultron, I'm just struck by how mesmerizing he makes this fully CGI robot character because of all the little quirks and the way that he... the line whenever he's like, you know, humans make, smaller humans, children, you know, it's like the way that it's like every little thing, he just nailed it and sort of infuses it with so much personality. And I felt like here.
You're unbearably naive.
Yes.
Well, to be fair, I was just born yesterday. One of the best lines ever.
It makes every conversation with him so much fun in that movie. And I think that you're right. It's really difficult to imagine that movie working without that performance being so strong, because I think people have talked about how it's such a, how that movie has a lot going on. And I think that's one of the through lines, is that it's just always fun to have him on screen. My point there is I felt a little bit like this iteration of Ultron felt more just like a bad guy. Like he is just an evil, I want to conquer everything bad guy. And I didn't feel like he brought the same kind of mystique that Spader's Ultron does.
Right. How about when he cuts off Claw's arm and goes, oh, I'm so sorry, that looks like it hurts. Ooh, I'm sorry, just don't talk to me like I'm Tony Stark.
I love my favorites, I'm sure that'll be fine.
But that's the kind of stuff that I love from Spader that I don't fully get here. But, you know, Ross is doing a good job. I'm not blasting him. It just really makes apparent how special Spader was. And by the way, if you're interested in that, if you're interested in more of that, you can watch some of the behind the scenes from Age of Ultron. And even the other actors talk about how special it was for them to work with James Spader and what a unique take on Ultron he had. And I think it was even surprising to them. So there's just a little bit of that I think we miss.
Man, I love that. I do want to say, I think that that is really worth highlighting. We're about to talk, or I want to talk in a little bit about the great comic shout outs in this episode.
That was one of my questions. But I was just going to say, like,
oh, great, okay,
comic stuff. That's what I wrote down. What did we miss, Robbie? It just felt like, oh, yeah, I was watching probably a million comic shout outs that I wouldn't know. That was the vibe, right, I was getting.
There's so much that so many are small that it would be hard to even go through without just rambling through a bullet point list. But there are a couple I want to talk about. Before I do that, I wanted to say one thing that's really impressive to me about James Spader's Ultron is the way that he took that character from the comics and created something. With the help of Joss Whedon, I think Joss Whedon wrote Ultron exceptionally well. I think Ultron has some of the best writing that Joss Whedon gave us. But the combo there created such a more interesting character to me than the versions of Ultron that I've read in the comics. And I think a big part of that is they did a great job. I mean, Ultron has a different origin in the comics that's not connected to Tony Stark. And I think we talked about that when we did our Age of Ultron episode. But I think that having that Tony Stark connection really helped a lot because they started channeling, it was the kind of dark Tony Stark energy, and you get that in that scene with the break a few eggs to make an omelet joke. And these moments where it's clear that they kind of have similar sensibilities. And so I just wanted to, I think it's worth flagging because this is not to speak ill of any other character, but like Hiddleston's Loki kind of follows some of the versions of Loki that we had gotten to know. And like Brolin's Thanos was definitely, I'm not going to at all say that that was not an incredible performance because it was, but it was more closely akin to the version of Thanos that we've gotten in the comics. But I just think that what Spader did was really, really unique. And I think that that is maybe what we're circling around here. And that's why we keep saying we're not criticizing the performance here. But I think it's just really, that's one that's kind of impossible to replicate.
I totally agree. Tell me the comic stuff I missed, please.
Okay, yes. So, like I said, there's a ton here. This is not going to be an exhaustive list. First and foremost, though, we got a great Age of Ultron adaptation, finally. There's an interesting history there where Bendis, who was still at Marvel at the time, still in some ways kind of the chief architect of the Marvel Comics universe during that period, had been promising an Age of Ultron big event book for years prior to the film's release. But the book actually didn't wind up coming out until pretty close before the film and has almost nothing in common with the film because the book and the reason it's called Age of Ultron is because it's about like a post-apocalyptic wasteland where Ultron has won and taken over and you have a few stragglers left that are kind of fighting, you know, they're freedom fighters. And the whole joke about the movie is that, you know, the Age of Ultron is like 48 hours long.
That's what I was just going to say. I was going to say pause for a second. As I'm hearing you tell me this, because I've never heard this before, that makes more sense on why some people who were massive fans of those comics would be bummed about the movie adaptation. Because
It
starts and is over really quickly without him doing a ton of damage, really.
Right, which I think, the only issue there to me is just that the title maybe is slightly misleading, but it also isn't if you think about what Ultron ends up ushering in as a result of his actions, and we can kind of get into that later. But I do think that they were right in the way they did it, because to try to make Ultron really change the world on that level, I think would really have devalued what happened in the snap. Like, you can't have the world be, like, nearly decimated that many times. Like, I think that they've handled that pacing fairly well up until now. And so I think the fact that, like, yes, the Avengers knew that the world was about to be destroyed, but the fact that, like, the rest of the world wasn't living in some post-apocalyptic condition and then saved and then have Thanos come and have the same thing happen, I think is smart of them. Anyway, this is very similar to how those comics look. And I think it might even start looking more similar in some ways based on where it's heading with the whole Guardians of the Multiverse thing or whatever we're going to call it, this team that Uatu seems to be assembling. But in the comics, it's more of a time travel thing. You have Wolverine. It's almost like Days of Future Pasty. You have Wolverine as one of the survivors, and he's going back in time. And, you know, in the comics, it's Hank Pym that created Ultron. So his whole idea is to just go back and murder Hank Pym in the past so that he can never create Ultron.
Smart.
And, yeah, you know, it creates this whole thing. It's so funny. In every universe, people hate Hank Pym. But they seem to maybe be doing something that's, you know, kind of a slight homage to that with, instead of time travel, it's pulling people from different realities to try to kind of undo the Ultron thing. Hmm. But, yeah, so that's the biggest thing. And I do think that they adapted that in a really, really fun way. And I like the substitution of the folks in that comic with Natasha and Clint. I think that works really well with them kind of being the stragglers. Other comic book stuff that's less influential but still shows up. We have a shout-out to this run. There's a comic in the main Captain America continuity where he was offered the presidency of the United States.
And that was funny.
Yeah, he famously turns it down in the main Marvel Universe because, of course, he's Steve Rogers and he will always do the selfless thing and refuse power if he can. But in the Ultimate Marvel Universe, he actually does become president for a while. So that's sort of a double shout out to both of those comics. Then we just have like a lot of little shots of things. Like we have a shot of Ultron looking very much like Galactus, which I think a lot of people seized on.
Is that the planet eating thing?
Yes. Yeah. And I don't think that that's supposed to be anything other than just a slight visual shout out. But the way that his Ultron suit with the Vision face looks ends up making him look a lot like Galactus. So that was kind of fun. It's also the first time we've ever seen anything like Galactus really adapted successfully, because people that have seen the second Fantastic Four movie from the mid-2000s will remember that they adapted Galactus just as this large purple storm blob. Yeah, the Silver Surfer one.
Oh my gosh, don't tell my wife. She's going to make me watch it. She made me watch the first one, and I'll never get those hours back.
Did you watch both? Like, did you watch the recent remake as well? I haven't actually seen that one.
Which one did I watch? I watched the one with Chris Evans.
Okay, yeah, no, that's the original, baby.
Okay, yeah.
That's, yeah, yeah.
wait, hold on. And I've seen a teeny bit of the other one. Doesn't the other one have Michael B. Jordan in it?
It does, yeah.
And Miles Teller? I've seen that one too, but now my brain is, that's the Silver Surfer one you're saying?
Yeah. No. That's a different one. So there are two in the Chris Evans series.
Oh gosh. I've definitely not seen number two in that series then.
And I actually remember the Silver Surfer scenes looking pretty cool. I mean, this was me when I was probably like 11 when this came out. So my definition of cool was probably a little bit different.
Everything looked cool to you. Yeah.
Right. But at the time,
we're way off topic. Sorry.
I know. You get a little bit of Planet Hulk stuff, just in that we go to Sakaar and see some of the Ragnarok arena.
Okay. There's a lot of comic shout outs. I feel like you're feeling the pressure to name everyone so that people don't go, "Hey, Robbie, but you missed this one from issue 17 of this and this and this." Are you feeling that pressure right now?
Okay. I'm always feeling that pressure. I want to say though, before we forget, this is not a comic Easter
egg.
There were a lot of Easter eggs that aren't comics Easter eggs that you also probably noted. And some of them are so obvious that we don't need to go over them, but some I just thought were fun enough to discuss. Like I really liked revisiting the Siberia spot from Civil War. And having them hopping up those platforms the same way that Bucky is at the end of Civil War was a really cool moment. I really liked them recreating, like what you talked about, that Hawkeye shot. That is
the
shot
from... The
Endgame
scene, but in reverse.
Yeah, yeah. And a little bit the Avengers scene when he's kind of falling from the top of the building and which was also recreated in the Matt Fraction Hawkeye series.
The one comic I've read. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And the final one is there is a this is the first time we see the Watcher use his kind of full power set, which I didn't know if he was going to have, because that's not a not every adaptation of him shows up that way. Like sometimes he really is just he doesn't really have a ton in the way of power other than just observation and the fact that he can kind of move through all these realities. But we saw him be kind of a full-on super being, so that was sort of fun. So this is the point where I'm handing it over to everyone else to tell me all the things that I didn't cover.
That's a perfect transition to help me get into some of the larger picture what-if questions I had. I wanted to say that I was really glued to this episode. Like, I really haven't been on what-if at least since the Doctor Strange episode. It felt very similar to the Loki finale in that way for me, where obviously not in the dialogue heavy or the action or all that, not that, but just like, I was like locked in on, oh my goodness, what are they going to do here? Because you and I have spent so much time saying it doesn't feel like these are very connected, and I'm sitting there watching them connect them. Right. So it was just a kind of on the edge of my seat thing, watching it. My last question, kind of on a ground level thing, and this is actually somebody brought up on our Slack, so I'm going to call this the community question of the week. But this wasn't directed at me, but somebody pointed out, what's the deal with the Infinity Stones now? In Loki, the Infinity Stones, remember, they were paperweights and totally useless in the TVA. And you and I kind of said, it's maybe not that the TVA is so powerful. It's possibly that the Infinity Stones, when pulled out of their reality, don't work. They kind of run their reality. And I don't know how much to take from this, but obviously in this episode, the Infinity Stones are bouncing between all realities and are still all powerful. And I thought that was an interesting question slash observation. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if that's just a mistake. I don't know if that's a mistake on our part. I don't know if that's trying to say that the TVA is just that unique. I don't like, or is it just a, hey, this is an animated show, it's different, and they can do what they want in it. I don't know. And that will help transition me to a bigger question then.
That is a really interesting question, and I think it was Lance maybe that I was talking about on the Slack with that earlier this week, or right after the ending of episode 7. Because as I've probably said before, maybe even in that first Loki episode review, in the comics, it is the case that an Infinity Stone only works within its native universe, which makes sense because the whole idea is that they're kind of distillation of the essence of that universe. You know, that's like what they came about in the Big Bang or however it is you want to talk about it. So they would have this power over the nature of that universe. And if you were to take them out of that universe, it would make sense that they wouldn't have that same sort of power. But in the MCU, we haven't been told that. What we were told, I think, is that in the TVA, you're just sort of outside of everything. And so the question was, is that, like that the TVA is so powerful? Is it that the TVA is just not technically a universe at all, so that nothing really has its power?
But in this case, I would say that would be true if maybe Ultron hadn't been able to use them in the mirror thing where the Watcher was living.
True.
That's technically not a universe, or it's a separate one or whatever, and yet it still worked there.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because that what Lance said that I think is fair is that Endgame could be seen as saying that Infinity Stones can work out of a native universe because of the way that they were able to use them from the past. Now, what I said back to him, and I think this opens up a very complicated line of questioning that we can't really follow right here, is what is the difference between an alternate universe and an alternate timeline?
Here we go.
You know what I mean? Because they're in Endgame, this is prior to the whole multiverse being introduced. Really, I mean, we got a little bit of that with the Sorcerer Supreme, but there's this sense that we are going back to an earlier point in our own timeline, and everything is exactly the same, right? So it's not like they were traveling and anything at all was different. They were relying on it all being totally the same, which is a little, what kind of makes sense in light of what He Who Remains was doing. But in light of what He Who Remains was doing, does that mean that they weren't actually going to alternate universes? Or like, how much were they being allowed to do? Like, it raises a lot of questions about what Endgame means, and that's why I'm a little loath to extrapolate too much from that when it comes to how the Infinity Stones work.
Okay. So my question to you, and I'm not trying to be funny, is what are we doing here? I'm legitimately confused now as to what the show is trying to do or trying to be. And I need you to almost talk me off a ledge on that. Because I was convinced that the show was going to be standalone stories that were good kind of parables for us to learn something about our main characters. And this is how they were, you know, operating in a different multiverse. And this is what could have happened if they had made a bad choice and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Make bad choices, right. Bad things happen.
or like and now, obviously, you know, you make good choices, good things happen.
Exactly. That's the other part of that. I just didn't include it because we've only been making bad choices today. But yes, make good choices, good things happen. I don't know where we're going, Robbie. Is that fair to say? I don't understand. Like, is this leading towards interacting with the timeline we know as a live action thing? Like the Infinity Stone thing transitioned me perfectly into this question because that's just another detail that I'm like, am I missing something? Or are we getting sloppy on the details? Or is this a perfect situation that later they can just retcon by saying time travel or multiverse? Right? Like, do you see what I'm saying? Where are we at? What are we doing? What are we headed towards?
It's a fair question. I do feel like there is some inconsistency there, either between this and
Loki and Endgame.
And yeah, I can't quite figure out what the deal is with the Infinity Stones. I don't really...
Okay, but even not just that, though. Like, is this... Like, right now, Ultron is battling the Watcher, right, through the multiverses.
Right.
I mean, does he literally go to a Star Wars planet? Does that mean that there's a reality where Star Wars is real? Besides the Star Wars planet, though, while that's happening, is this show telling me that there is currently one of those multiverses that he might crash through is a live-action version of Sam Wilson in Louisiana hanging out with Bucky?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's definitely implied.
So Ultron taking over this multiverse is threatening everything we know, even in the live action stuff.
Yes, I think so. I think we're being told
that they might face Ultron in the future.
Okay. So I think in universe, I can't even say that anymore. Within the narrative of the show, yes, I think that that is a possibility. I think if you took this premise at face value, if Ultron wins and beats the Watcher and whoever else the Watcher is assembling, I think that that would result eventually in the destruction of our main MCU timeline. Now, the part of me that is outside of the narrative thinks that that will not happen, just because that feels like a bad idea story-wise, and it does feel like a really big swing to take on an animated anthology show that I know a lot of people are not super clued into.
Doesn't that seem strange? That's what I'm hung up on too. This is animated.
Yeah, I think I see what you're saying. It's a strange line there, and I don't know that I don't know that I needed this turn, frankly. And I'm not trying to be controversial. I really loved this episode. I had a ton of fun watching it. I have always said I was not going to be angry if they did an assembling all the heroes of the multiverse thing, but that I didn't know if it was something that I needed from a show like this. And I think the reason I say that is I think there's a lot of other ground that you can cover here before you ever have to move into that sort of territory, even just with the Watcher. Like, one thing I've noticed that we haven't even really gotten, and we might, I could even see the next episode opening up with a prologue like this, is the Watcher's origin story that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby gave us back in the early, early Fantastic Four comics, which is the reason why he doesn't interfere. And there's a whole kind of morality thing there where he's part of a group of people that at one point did help a primitive society by giving them more advanced technology and helping their quality of life. And they basically wind up using that technology to create the equivalent of nuclear weapons, and they destroy their own planet. And as a result, the Watchers decide they're never going to interfere again because they feel responsible. And it doesn't, you know, it's not their role to decide how a certain society should progress. Now, in fairness, the Watcher was sort of taken from that context where he operates within the universe and brought into the multiverse context by the What If comic series that we've talked about, where he always narrates those things. Mm-hmm. And so I get why they're kind of now meshing all that and making the Watcher more a part of the multiversal system. But I guess my point is, it seems like there's territory to explore, to get to know him better as a character, to get to know what his motivations are, without having to make the entire multiverse hang in the balance, especially this early. Like, if we're getting several seasons of this show, that to me seems like, you know, a very end of the final season of the show that would maybe correspond with the very end of this quote-unquote multiverse era or phase that we seem to be coming into. And I don't want, that's all speculation. It could go totally differently. Next week's episode may leave that in a way where this sounds ridiculous and makes no sense. But do you see what I'm saying? Where I don't know that we had to go in this direction. Mm-hmm.
I don't even know that I needed to see that the Watcher was capable of that kind of power. Is that weird? Like, I was thinking the Watcher was a guy who just observed, couldn't interfere, and therefore, because of that, he was powerful because he could see everything, but he wasn't powerful as far as physically strong. And now I'm watching him turn into basically a superhero in that he's assembling a team to fight Ultron. And I get why.
Right.
I just don't know if I even needed that. I think what I'm struggling with is I think I would have been, again, I'm like you. I really enjoyed this episode. I was glued to it. I think if I was the head of Marvel Studios, I would have just kept these things totally separate. Like, if the What If animated multiverse was a thing, that's fine. I just don't ever need it to affect how I feel about anything in the main multiverse, the live action multiverse. Because I'm just kind of starting to get my head around the multiverse in Spider-Man, for example, where there's other Spider-Mans, and I get that. But that even still seems like I could still find a way to connect that all in my brain and be okay with it.
Right.
But like, if you're bringing in this show and what it's doing into quote unquote canon of everything we know from the live action stuff, I just don't know that I needed that. Like you, I agree with you. And another reason I don't think I need it is because, like I said earlier in this episode, it feels like if we do that, things are just getting sloppier and sloppier. It's starting to feel a little bit like X-Men, in how we have to do tons of retconning on little things. Like I said to you on the phone today, like, and our listeners make fun of me for this, so I get it. But if we're bringing this into the way we know things in the live action stuff, then the power levels are all jacked up. Like, I understand that it was funny and it's cool to cut Thanos in half, and everyone, all of our listeners probably right away thought, oh, Kyle's going to be sensitive about that part, and I get it. If it's a separate What If multiverse, then I think it's kind of funny and it shows Ultron's power, and that's cool. If that's separate, right? That makes sense in the animated series to me. But if we're now supposed to accept that that is a reality that could have played out in the live action stuff as well, I just don't think we got any indication that would ever have been possible. Like, we've seen Vision use the stone before, and it's been repelled by, for example, the Black Order. They fought it off.
By Ultron.
By Ultron.
Well, I to your point, I just want to say to everyone that's thinking, oh, Kyle's being too sensitive about Thanos, I don't even think it's a Thanos issue. I think it's a, you're right. Like,
I just think it's a details issue.
Yeah, in that final scene of Age of Ultron, when they take him down, you have Thor hitting Ultron with the lightning and Tony hitting him with a repulsor blast and Vision hitting him with the Mind Stone. And he's kind of sitting there taking it for, what, 15 seconds? You know, just holding all of those off.
And then contrast that to, we've never seen Thanos even really take a hit other than Thor's axe.
Right.
Like, all of Tony's tech doesn't even, like, puncture his skin. Right? Spider-Man can't puncture his skin. Captain Marvel can't even puncture his skin. And so we've never seen anything just come in and slice someone in half. And why is the Mind Stone that much more powerful than the three stones Thanos had?
Right. And why, like, why? Well, we don't even have to get into the fact that he had those stones and that, you know, I like to think Thanos would be showing up aware of some possible threat.
Right.
Whatever, you know, like.
So that's what I'm saying. If this ends up being quote unquote canon with our real universe, then those things, they should have gotten more correct. The little details like that. Just tiny details.
Yeah. Like you're saying, if because, again, I don't think that this would ever happen. But I think it's maybe worth the thought experiment of, since we're supposed to believe right now that the entire multiverse hangs in the balance, I think it's worth going through the thought experiment of, okay, let's say that Ultron wins and winds up in our main MCU timeline and has to fight our Avengers, whatever you think about that, then yeah, that you're right. Everything that Ultron has now gone through and done to get there is technically now part of our story and is sort of canonized. And that does have consequences for the way, like if you're someone that really cares about the carefully curated continuity of the MCU, then...
Which I do.
Then yeah, I mean, I think you can either say, hey, come on, it's an animated show, it doesn't matter. And I think that's totally fair. And I live there most of the time. But I think that what you're pointing out rightly...
Well, that's where I was at with, like, Captain Carter. I was like, hey, it's an animated show. She can jump over walls. That's why it's different. Just, you know, get over it.
Right.
It's not a big deal. But now, are they forcing me to not get over it?
Yeah, I mean, it seems a little bit like they're wanting it both ways.
How would any of our Avengers, in the timeline we know, stand any chance against that? How was that even a thing to talk about?
Right.
That's like asking, remember how would Wyatt Russell do against Thanos? Like, that's what this is like. Like,
right.
Like if we just saw that with one stone, he can saw Thanos in half in a split second without Thanos even catching on to him, and the Watcher now is getting destroyed by him, how would Bucky Barnes do anything against that version of him? Like, what's the point of even having them in the same? Literally, he grew to a size where he's eating a universe. How do our Avengers compete with that? And that's where it's like, if it's separate, I'm totally fine. If it's separate, then it's fun and it's whatever. We can watch Doctor Strange, who gained all this power, give it a shot. But I just don't know if they are. I'm too hung up on that, I guess. But whatever.
No, I think it's fair. I want to say again that this is not us ragging on the episode. Like, we enjoyed it, and this is not us being like stodgy old MCU conservatives or something.
Get off my lawn.
I'm very fine. Like, I'm excited about the directions that they've taken parts of Phase 4. I think that what I'm hoping is that all this will be kind of cleared up next episode, and that any concerns that we have will kind of be eased. I think for me, the thing that I'm trying to voice is just that I was sort of excited for the main multiverse work to be done in the main MCU timeline. Like, I want to see all of that. And to the degree that we're seeing consequential activities take place, or really finding out more things about how the multiverse is breaking down and how that's functioning and the results of that, I want to see that in Loki season 2. I want to see that in Doctor Strange Multiverse Madness. I want to see that in No Way Home. I want What If, and what I've been excited for What If to be is just an exploration of this vast multiverse. Just show me everything out there. Just show me this is one, and this is one, and this is one, and this is one. And that's why I'm saying, personally, I don't need What If to be building toward its own Avengers or Infinity War or whatever you want to call it, because I thought the whole fun of it was, okay, look, Loki broke the multiverse open. You must be asking yourself, what does that mean? Well, let us show you what that means, you know?
Right. My question to you as we wrap up here is, where do you think that's all going then? Like, for example, what you just said, I think both you and I were thinking, okay, Loki kind of showed us that Kang was doing this work of keeping these other realities from branching off and existing. Well, then when you killed Kang, who seemed to be the key figure in this, all those started existing. Where are we going, do you think? Give me your best guess here on the last day of September. Like, Ultron is now in this show able to be so strong that he can become aware of its existence and get outside of it. What's happening in Spider-Man, do you think? And what's happening in Doctor Strange? Like in Spider-Man, the trailer, they make the trailer seem like the spell gone wrong is what causes it to now be open or be aware of it or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like what's actually going on? Like which thing is telling the truth? Where do you think it's going? Give me your best guess.
So my hope has been, since we first started exploring multiverse territory, that we were heading towards a time runs out, Secret Wars thing, like what I've talked about, way down the road. And in the meantime, we might start seeing some kind of warning signs here and there that are not the main focus, but might be later. And in a similar way to what I think, you know, like we talk about the Infinity War being about the Infinity Stones, but for the longest time, it wasn't. You know, like it was happening in the background. It was driving a lot of the action. We had this threat looming. But at the same time, the fact that we were talking about this earlier, the fact that the Infinity Stones were coming didn't mean that you didn't care about the minutiae of what was happening in Spider-Man Homecoming or in Ant-Man.
100%.
You know?
100%, but we knew what the ultimate agenda was looming in the background. We knew the grounded nature of it.
Well, and that's kind of where I like the 1-2 punch, at least in my mind, and we'll see how this changes, of Loki opening up the multiverse again, and of Spider-Man No Way Home potentially breaking that multiverse and creating an issue, potentially, that ultimately becomes the next big thing that people have to face in the MCU. And the reason I kind of like that idea, like I've said before, is that we had such a great final villain that I do think that to try to create a new Thanos right now, it would just be hard. Like, I don't know that we can do that with Galactus or any of the other folks people have thrown out. Although I should say here that Doctor Doom is wrapped up in Secret Wars in a really interesting way. So if you did want to kind of change that up and also still have a concrete actual villain, that would be a really interesting way to do that. That would look different than we have with Thanos. So
is Kang the looming threat in the background then, or is now Ultron or Galactus or Doctor Doom or whatever?
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's the great question. I don't think it's Kang. I think Kang is going to maybe stay around post Quantumania.
Oh,
but I
don't.
I don't think Kang's the ultimate bad guy of the next phase. That's my theory. I could be wrong. He could be.
Operating under the principle that that was the case because of Loki.
Yeah, see, I think that if he were, I would be a little bit disappointed. Like, Kang has been a longtime villain, and he's a good villain, but he doesn't have the kind of gravitas for me that a Thanos or a Doctor Doom does.
So maybe when Spider-Man breaks the multiverse, as you say, this version of Ultron or Galactus could appear?
Yeah, we'll see. And that's what I'm saying I don't love about this is the theory I just laid out about how I could see this progressing.
But it could totally happen though.
Yeah, for sure. But what I'm saying is that kind of relies on this steady bit by bit, oh, here's this. Like we're seeing some kind of like weird little warning signs before it is suddenly a full-on catastrophe. That's why I don't love having a full-on catastrophe happening now. Like, before we've seen anything else with the multiverse, before we've seen Kang, which is supposed to be the first big multiversal issue to come up, we are seeing now another multiverse hopping being that is ostensibly much stronger than Kang. You know, like, you know what I'm saying? It seems like it's muddying. It's exactly what I was saying earlier about why I liked the Avengers Age of Ultron movies approach to, instead of being another alien invasion, instead of being another everyone in the world is now dealing with this massive global scale tragedy or invasion or whatever you want to call it, it was relatively contained, still with massive consequences, because it helps keep the pacing to where that culmination with Infinity War and Endgame felt very earned, felt very appropriate, instead of it feeling like what I always say is like the Dragon Ball Z quandary of you have one biggest villain in the world, and then magically the next villain to pop up just happens to be, you know, one level stronger than the one that came before, and so on and so on and so on, and eventually just starts to get a little bit redundant. So that's what I've been saying in a very roundabout way is by jumping straight to Ultron Destroyer of Worlds, I just feel a little bit like we're moving too quickly down that path.
Again, unless it was a totally separate thing, then right. It would be no problem. My last question then, in kind of wrapping this up, is if we're building towards a Secret Wars thing, like you've talked about so many times, right? If we're building towards that, I guess, could this be a scenario? Let me throw this out there. Could it be a thing where in next episode of What If, that version of his universe that Ultron came from, let's say he doesn't even lose in that, but it gets tied up into one universe that has Ultron or Galactus or whatever in it. Okay, close that. That's one. What if theoretically, like, the Eternals exist in a different one? That's not Earth 616, let's say. Let's say that's Earth 937.
Uh-huh.
And that's one. And then what we've known with Tony and Steve and Thor, that's one. That's Earth 616. And then theoretically, maybe just hypothetically, you know, Doctor Strange makes us aware of another one. Is that what you're saying, that we could be building toward each one of those battling each other?
Yes, sort of. I mean, and it all depends on how it's adapted, obviously, but I think...
But theoretically, that's where it could be headed.
But theoretically, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the way it's happened in the comics is that fragments of a lot of these destroyed universes are kind of cobbled together and create one last remnant of them all in the form of this, like, hodgepodge.
It's like, yeah.
So, and that's what they call Battle World and yada, yada, yada. But so in that sense, I could see, you know, here's where you have the universe with Galactus, Ultron, and, you know, here's the one where you have the universe with Doctor Strange that's super dark, and you know what I mean? Like, I could see it going that way. I still think ultimately, after all of this hashtag Robbie ranting, that it is, I think, our original ideas about what this show
it's going to be like the Watcher's dream next week. This will be like, wait, what? Right.
the top's just going to be spinning whenever the credits roll.
Exactly.
I do think that that's ultimately, it's going to be self-contained, because I just don't think that they're going to expect this much development to be happening in the series. I think that if you watch it all, it will probably end up enhancing your understanding of how the multiverse works in the MCU. Mm. But I think that's ultimately going to be the most it does in terms of interacting with our main timeline. That's my current theory.
I think I'm with you, because I just ultimately think they're too smart to put that much emphasis on a show like this. Not that the show's not good. The show's been really good. But I'm with you. I don't think they're going to bypass all the character work we did in, say, WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier, and just say, here's where we're going to get all the important information in a What If show that's right. animated.
Right.
Well, I'll say this for them. They have me intrigued.
Yeah.
I'm as anticipatory of next week's episode as I've been thus far. So, I mean, so far these finales have been pretty crazy each time, and I can't wait to see where this goes. And I at this moment, I have no idea what our conversation is going to be like next week.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
no,
if
yeah.
it's going to be a game changer, is it self-contained? Is it wrapped up? Is it not wrapped up? How open-ended for season two is it? Is Ultron defeated? Like, I have so many questions, and the only way I can find out is wait till next Wednesday. Yeah, guys, on National Podcast Day, thank you so much for listening. Gosh, it's been fun to have this podcast. Thank you to all of you, wherever you are listening, however you're listening. Seriously, thank you for making us a part of your day. We love it.
We are excited to be back here next week wrapping up What If. We're then going to have a very fun episode reflecting back on What If and getting ready for what's coming, in addition to announcing a lot of other things in other corners of the Friends From Work universe. So if you're not already, be sure to follow us on all the social media platforms at the FFW Podcast. You can go to the FFWpodcast.com, where we will also maybe be launching some exciting new merch items, Kyle. And go ahead and join the Slack. Look, I think it's becoming an increasingly large part of the podcast experience in a way that I've really enjoyed. It seems like it's a fun way to kind of bring this community together, which is always what we've wanted. So you can find that on the Friends From Work website as well, or in the show notes. But most importantly, we just appreciate you listening. So if that's all you can do, that's more than enough. And we are so happy every time you choose to subscribe, download, and spend some time with us. So that is it for this episode. We will see you right back here next time on Friends From Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.